Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute program of news and stories is designed for people learning English. So, we speak slowly, using a simple style and limited vocabulary. Today, we have reports from Pete Musto, Anna Mateo, and Alice Bryant. We close the show with an American story. But first, President Donald Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, has agreed to cooperate with the government and admitted guilt to charges linked to his work in Ukraine. The deal requires Manafort to cooperate fully and truthfully with Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. In return, Manafort will not face a second trial in which he could receive more severe punishment. In a court document, Manafort said he was guilty of plotting against the United States and plotting to obstruct justice. Both charges are related to his work for a pro-Russian political party in Ukraine. Manafort was to go on trial again in Washington next week. Now that trial is canceled. He was found guilty last month of 8 financial crimes in a separate trial in Virginia. Manafort's attorney, Kevin Downing, said Manafort wanted to make sure that his family was able to remain safe and live a good life. He's accepted responsibility. Trump's press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, released a brief statement on the issue Friday. This had absolutely nothing to do with the president or his victorious 2016 presidential campaign, she said. It is totally unrelated. Trump's lawyer Rudy Giuliani also commented, saying, "Once again, an investigation has concluded with a plea having nothing to do with President Trump or the Trump campaign. The reason? The president did nothing wrong." Manafort and his former deputy, Rick Gates, were the first people charged in the special counsel's investigation of Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. They were charged in connection with their work for Ukrainian political parties and pro-Russian former president Viktor Yanukovych. In March 2016, Manafort joined the Trump campaign and served as campaign chairman from June to August. He also attended a June 2016 meeting at the Trump Tower with a Russian lawyer. The meeting was described as part of the Russian government's effort to help the Trump campaign. Several former Trump aides also have pleaded guilty to charges related to Mueller's investigation. Last October, George Papadopoulos, a campaign advisor, admitted to lying to investigators about his Russian-related meeting. Papadopoulos has since agreed to work with Mueller's investigation. In December, Trump's former national security advisor, Michael Flynn, admitted to lying about his contacts with the Russian ambassador to the United States, Sergei Kislyak. Earlier this year, Rick Gates, who served as deputy chairman for the Trump campaign, pleaded guilty to charges of plotting. He also cooperated in the government's case against Manafort. Trump's longtime personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, admitted to working with an unnamed candidate to illegally buy the silence of two women. The payment dates and amounts are the same as those made to Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal, who say they had sexual relationships with Trump. In February, a U.S. federal grand jury charged 13 Russian nationals and three Russian companies with plotting to interfere in the 2016 U.S. presidential election.
Engineers have launched a huge garbage collection device to gather plastic material floating in the Pacific Ocean between California and Hawaii. The plastic makes up what is called the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. It is the world's largest spread of garbage, at 2 times the size of the state of Texas. The organization Ocean Cleanup created the collection device. The group's founder is Boyan Slot, a 24-year-old inventor from the Netherlands. Slot was just 16 years old when he was moved to clean up the oceans. He had been on a scuba dive in the Mediterranean Sea and saw more plastic bags than fish. The problem has only grown since. The plastic is really persistent, and it doesn't go away by itself, and the time to act is now, Slot said. He told the Associated Press that researchers with his organization have found plastic from the 1960s and 1970s among the material in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. It contains an estimated 1.8 trillion pieces of plastic in total. Most float on the surface of the water or are within a few meters of the surface.
Last Saturday, a ship pulling the pipe-shaped floating barrier left San Francisco for the garbage patch. The barrier, called the floater, is 600 meters across. Attached to it is a screening skirt that hangs 3 meters down in the water. The screen is designed to collect the plastic as it moves through the water. Sea animals can safely swim under the barrier. The cleanup system also comes with lights powered by the sun, cameras, and other special devices. Slot said this will make it so the system can communicate its position at all times. That way, a support ship can find it every few months to remove the plastic it has collected. Shipping containers will hold all the plastic gathered, including bottles and fishing equipment. Slot said the containers are expected to be back on land within a year. Then the plastic will be recycled. Slot said he and his team will closely examine the system's use of time and energy. They will also study how it performs in severe ocean conditions, including huge waves. We still have to prove the technology, he said.
The Ocean Cleanup has received $35 million in donations to pay for the project, including from the heads of companies like Salesforce.com and PayPal. The organization hopes to launch 60 free-floating barriers in the Pacific Ocean by 2020. One of our goals is to remove 50% of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch in 5 years, Slot said. The free-floating barriers are made to survive extreme weather conditions and damage from continual use. They will stay in the water for 20 years and in that time collect 90% of the garbage in the patch, Slot added. George Leonard is the chief scientist of the Ocean Conservancy, a nonprofit environmental activist group. He expressed concern about the cleaning project. He said even if plastic garbage can be taken out of the oceans, more continues to enter the water each year. We at the Ocean Conservancy are highly skeptical, but we hope it works, he said. The ocean needs all the help it can get.
Leonard said 8 million metric tons of plastic waste enter the ocean yearly. He said a solution to the problem must include preventing plastic from reaching the ocean. He said more education is needed so people reduce the use of single-use plastic containers and bottles. Leonard said his group will hold its yearly international coastal cleanup on September 15th. About 1 million volunteers around the world will collect garbage from beaches and waterways. Last year, the Ocean Conservancy volunteers collected about 9,000 metric tons of plastic worldwide in about 2 hours, he said. Leonard also raised concerns that animals might be captured by the net that will hang below the surface. But Boyan Slut said he does not think that will happen. The system will act as a big boat that stands still in the water, with nothing for sea creatures to get caught in, Slut said. But a boat carrying experienced marine biologists will also be launched to make sure the device is not harming wildlife. I'm the first to acknowledge that this has never been done before and that it is important to collect plastic on land and close the taps on plastic entering into the ocean. But I also think humanity can do more than one thing at a time to tackle this problem, Slot said. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Pete Musto.
You probably know a lot of food words, such as bread, apple, and rice. But knowing which foods are countable and which are not can be tricky. In today's Ask a Teacher, Abdu from Sudan writes,
how do I know which foods can be plural? For example, if I want two of some food, can I say, I would like two beefs or I would like two breads?
Hello, Abdu, and thanks for writing to us. To answer your question, it depends on where you are asking for these things. If you are asking for bread in a restaurant, you're probably asking for slices or pieces, but in a bakery, you're probably asking for loaves. If you are asking for beef in a market, you're probably asking for grams. But in a restaurant, you're likely to ask for pieces. In other words, you do not add an S to beef or bread. That is because these foods are non-count nouns, nouns that have only one form. They do not have a plural. Meats, grains, and liquids are usually non-count nouns. Sugar, salt, and pepper are too. To show you are talking about more than one of these nouns, you put another word or phrase in front of them. Often, different foods take different wording. Below are some common phrases you might use. Two bowls of rice, two ears of corn, two bags of flour, two pieces or loaves of bread. Piece also works for meats when you are asking for an amount of food for a plate. 2 pieces of chicken, 2 pieces of lamb, 2 pieces of fish, 2 pieces of beef. If you are shopping in a market, you might ask for 2 grams of chicken, lamb, or other meat. With liquids, you often describe the container it comes in. 2 glasses of water, milk, or juice. 2 cups of coffee or tea. 2 cans or bottles of soda. 2 pitchers of lemonade. For sugar, salt, and pepper, it also depends on whether you are purchasing an amount or just want a small amount for your meal. 2 packs or bags of sugar, or 2 pinches or shakers of salt or pepper. The good news is that most other food nouns are count nouns. They have singular and plural forms. For example, apple is a singular count noun. To make it plural, you can just write or say apples. Whew! That is a lot easier. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Alice Bryant.
Next up is our program, American Stories. Today, Shep O'Neill brings us part one of Benito Sereno by Herman Melville.
Captain Benito Sereno hurried aboard his ship. It was ready to sail. A bright sun and a soft breeze promised good weather ahead. The ship's anchor was raised, and the San Dominique, old but still seaworthy, moved slowly out of the harbor of Valparaiso on the west coast of Chile. It was carrying valuable products and slaves up the Pacific coast to Callao, another Spanish colonial port near Lima, Peru. The slaves, both male and female, slept on deck. They were not chained because their owner, Don Alejandro, said they were peaceful. The San Dominique moved steadily forward under a clear sky. The weather showed no sign of change. Day after day, the soft breeze kept the ship on course toward Peru. Slave traffic between Spain's colonial ports in this year of 1799 had been steady, but there were few outbreaks of violence. What happened, therefore, on board the San Dominique could not have been expected. On the 7th day out, before daybreak, the slaves rose up in rebellion. They swept through the ship with handspikes and hatchets, moving with the fury of desperate men. The attack was a complete surprise. Few of the crew were awake. All hands, except the 2 officers on the watch, lay in a deep, untroubled sleep. The rebels sprang upon the 2 officers and left them half dead. Then, one by one, they killed 18 of the sleeping crew. They threw some overboard, alive. A few hid and escaped death. The rebels tied up 7 others, but left them alive to navigate the ship. As the day began to break, Captain Sereno came slowly, carefully, up the steps toward the chief rebel leader, Babo, and begged for mercy. He promised to follow Babbo's commands if he would only put an end to the killings. But This had no effect. Babo had three men brought up on deck and tied. Then the three Spaniards were thrown overboard. Babo did this to show his power and authority, that he was in command. Babo, however, promised not to kill Captain Sereno. But everything he said carried a threat. He asked the captain if in these seas there were any Negro countries. None, Sereno answered. Then take us to Senegal or the neighboring island of St. Nicholas. Captain Sereno was shaken. That is impossible, he said. It would mean going around Cape Horn, and this ship is in no condition for such a voyage, and we do not have enough supplies or sails or water. Take us there anyway, Babo answered sharply, showing little interest in such details. If you refuse, we will kill every white man on board. Captain Sereno knew he had no choice. He told the rebel leader that the most serious problem in making such a long voyage was water. Babo said they should sail to the island of Santa Maria, near the southern end of Chile. He knew that no one lived on the island, but water and supplies could be found there. He forced Captain Sereno to keep away from any port. He threatened to kill him the moment he saw him start to move toward any city, town, or settlement on shore. Sereno had to agree to sail to the island of Santa Maria. He still hoped that he might meet along the way, or at the island itself, a ship that could help him. Perhaps, who knows, he might find a boat on the island and be able to escape to the nearby coast of Arauco. Hope was all he had left, and that was getting smaller each day. Captain Sereno steered south for Santa Maria. The voyage would take weeks. 8 days after the ship turned south, Babo told Captain Sereno that he was going to kill Don Alejandro, owner of the slaves on board. He said it had to be done. Otherwise, he and the other slaves could never be sure of their freedom. He refused to listen to the captain's appeals, and ordered two men to pull Don Alejandro up from below and kill him on deck. It was done as ordered. Three other Spaniards were brought up and thrown overboard. Babo warned Sereno and the other Spaniards that each one of them would go the same way if any of them gave the smallest cause for suspicion. Sereno decided to do everything possible to save the lives of those remaining. He agreed to carry the rebels safely to Senegal if they promised peace and no further bloodshed. And he signed a document that gave the rebels ownership of the ship and its cargo. Later, as they sailed down the long coast of Chile, the wind suddenly dropped. The ship drifted into a deep calm. For days it lay still in the water. The heat was fierce, the suffering intense. There was little water that made matters worse. Some of those on board were driven mad. A few died. The pressure and tension made many violent, and they killed a Spanish officer. After a time, a breeze came up and set the ship free again, and it continued south. The voyage seemed endless. The ship sailed for weeks with little water on board. It moved through days of good weather and periods of bad weather. There were times when it sailed under heavy skies, and times when the wind dropped and the ship lay becalmed in lifeless air. The crew seemed half dead. At last, one evening in the month of August, the San Dominique reached the lonely island of Santa Maria. It moved slowly toward one of the island's bays to drop anchor. Not far off lay an American ship, and the sight of the ship caught the rebels by surprise. The slaves became tense and fearful. They wanted to sail away quickly, but their leader, Babo, opposed such a move. Where could they go? Their water and food were low. He succeeded in bringing them under control and in quieting their fears. He told them they had nothing to fear, and they believed him. Then he ordered everyone to go to work, to clean the decks and put the ship in proper and good condition so that no visitor would suspect anything was wrong. Later, he spoke to Captain Sereno, warning him that he would kill him if he did not do as he was told. He explained in detail what Sereno was to do and say if any stranger came on board. He held a dagger in his hand, saying it would always be ready for any emergency. The American vessel was a large trade ship and seal hunter, commanded by Captain Amasa Delano. He had stopped at Santa Maria for water. On the American ship, shortly after sunrise, an officer woke Captain Delano and told him a strange sail was coming into the bay. The captain quickly got up, dressed, and went up on deck. Captain Delano raised his spyglass and looked closely at the strange ship coming slowly in. He was surprised that there was no flag. A ship usually showed its flag when entering a harbor where another ship lay at anchor. As the ship got closer, Captain Delano saw it was damaged. Many of its sails were ripped and torn. A mast was broken, and the deck was in disorder. Clearly, the ship was in trouble. The American captain decided to go to the strange vessel and offer help. He ordered his whaleboat put into the water and had his men bring up some supplies and put them in the boat. Then they set out toward the mystery ship. As they approached, Captain Delano was shocked at the poor condition of the ship. He wondered what could have happened and what he would find.
And that is our show today. We'll be back tomorrow. Same time, same place. Hope you can join us then. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.